from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Hey, Ursula, did you enjoy yesterday?
I loved last night.
Talk to me. What were you thinking last night?
Well, it was 7 o'clock, and I was saying, you know what? Maybe I'm not so bad with this whole daylight saving time and skipping an hour of sleep, because last night was the most glorious sunset.
Yeah.
And it was so late.
It was so nice. I did lose track of time last night because of how I was doing my stuff. And then I heard the garage door open. That means Lillian was home. And I looked down. I'm like, oh, my goodness, it's 6:30. Whoa. So I'm also looking forward to I'm not really one that always like, oh, the weather's going to be this. It's not my thing.
I am.
But, yo, we might hit 60s. 60. I want to say 60s.
Yeah.
But I heard 60.
Even if we creep close to 60, I'm feeling good.
Oh, that'd be nice.
We're looking at Friday, right?
Yes. What's going on the show today, Ursula?
Well, we've got a very packed show. In our top stories, we're going to talk about what happened in Bellingham. You know, yesterday, you and I were really excited about this idea that the mayor had proposed. Well, apparently, the city council has now rejected it. So we're going to get into that. Also, just a reminder right now that we want to interact with you. You can text us on our state roofing text line, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. And also, the cameras are on us right now. You've got to check out G's get up. I say it because every day, I think you've got a whole new wardrobe.
Yeah. Just, you know, I know that now the cameras are on us. Yeah, the cameras are on us. And so now I have to, like,
dress it up. Well, I haven't changed. So I'll just preface it with that. Mm-hmm. But you can check out us on the live stream on MyNorthwest.com and, of course, our CHIRO radio app. Are we ready?
Let's get to it. It's time to get the people what they want. Ursula's top news stories of the day brought to you by Wayscar 40 Suzu in Auburn.
Unionized workers at PCC Community Markets are demanding better pay and working conditions, saying that they don't even make enough money to shop at their own grocery stores. The workers held a rally yesterday in downtown Seattle, and this employee tells CHIRO 7 TV she hasn't had a merit raise in 16 years.
We want it in our pockets, you know, a livable wage, a cost of living raise, like merit raises, to be fairly compensated for our contributions.
She and others say it's gotten so bad that the co-op had to set up a food pantry to make sure that they could eat. As the Seattle Times reports, the issue of wages became even more pronounced when Seattle ended its hazard pay for grocery workers, which amounted to an additional $4 an hour. These employees at PCC are part of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. They also want contract negotiations to start now. In response, PCC has now sent out a statement saying that they support their staff's right to organize and their right to free speech, but they look forward to the collective bargaining process to start this summer.
Well, I hope they do the right thing, and I hope that by this summer we're not talking about this and they're not doing the right thing by paying them. Ursula, it is much easier in the United States to be decently dressed. You talked about me being dressed right now. It is much easier to be decently dressed than it is to be decently housed, fed, or doctored here in this country. From the year 2000 to 2022, over the last 22 years, in the average American city, the cost of fuel and utilities, right? Utilities can be all different types of lights, gas, all those things, have increased by 115%. Everything that we talked about, without drawing this out, everything that we talk about on a daily basis is increasing. Everything over the last year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, only except for pay. And as a matter of fact, the United States offers some of the lowest wages in the industrialized world. A larger share of workers in the United States make, quote, low pay, earning less than 2/3 of the median wages than any other country. belonging to the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development. According to this group, nearly 23% of American workers labor in low-paying jobs, compared with roughly 17% in Britain and 11% in Japan. And there's other numbers as well. What we are and by the way, a lot of these figures are for those 35 and older. So it's not just the high school kids or anything like that. We have a low pay problem in this country, Ursula.
Well, add to that the fact that we just learned this morning that consumer prices went up 6% from a year ago. So, yes, you are, in fact, still paying more for everything. I did look into how much PCC workers are being paid.
What are they paying?
I'm kind of surprised because when I go to PCC, and I have one really close to my house, uh-huh. I'm not a member, uh-huh. So I pay the full price. But, I know that there are people who proudly work there. A lot of the folks work there for a long time. And there are people who go in. It's never empty, as far as I see.
Right.
So I was expecting that they would be paid more, but I looked into it. I looked into their own website because the Seattle Times story didn't have how much they're being paid. And it depends on which city they are in with what minimum wage. But right now on PCC's website, it says a deli helper clerk could make $18.69 an hour. Uh-huh. A cashier makes anywhere from $16 to $23 an hour, depending on experience. When you get into management or a bigger role, meat department coordinator would get $30 an hour. Mm-hmm. So what they're asking for is at a minimum to go back to that, get that additional $4 an hour mm-hmm. that they were getting during
the hazard pay,
the height of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Do you think that hazard pay should still be something that all grocery workers
yes.
should make?
Yes, they should have never dropped that pay, because that's what this pandemic has done. And I've been continuing to say that the pandemic and what we've been through, the pause, this quarantining, the work from home has made us all look at all of the inequities in every facet of what we go through. Kai, one of our favorite listeners, just texted in and says, man, if I had you guys' job, I would be exhausted by the repetitive stories like here we go again. Yeah, they're repetitive because just depends on the industry we're talking about. Right now, we're talking about the grocery industry and we're talking about PCC. Speaking of PCC, I just want to say this. I'm actually kind of shocked by this, because when I go to PCC and I go inside of there,
the only thing I'm not shocked about is that they can't afford to buy food at the grocery stores.
So
it is a little spendy in there. I always feel like I'm paying a little bit more. I mean, it's kind of, for me, like, it's similar to Whole Foods.
But
I'm not going in there for the cheap prices.
But I'll say this. I've gone into PCC before, bunches of times. I'm actually shocked that this story is coming from PCC.
Yeah.
Because PCC has the vibe of a little bit more progressive. You know what I mean? That's the vibe that I get in PCC when I go in there. Ursula,
yeah.
Do you go into one by your house?
Yes, I mentioned that. Yes,
you get the same vibe.
Yes, I do. Okay, it's been over 3 years since Manny Ellis died at the hands of Tacoma police, and there has been delay after delay in the trial of the officers who were charged with killing him. In this latest appeal, a disagreement over whether the city should hand over another officer's internal statement as evidence was apparently already resolved before it even got to the state Supreme Court. So in other words, it was a moot point. Meanwhile, the News Tribune reports that the city is still paying the three officers who've been on leave since June of 2020 when the medical examiner ruled Ellis's death a homicide, and the cost to taxpayers is expected to top $1 million by the time the officers go to trial now on September 18th, barring any additional delays.
Yeah. Why is this taking so long? Why is this taking almost 3 years? The January firings of those five Memphis police officers that were charged with beating Tyree Nichols to death, they were fired before that even happened. And of course, you have Derek Chauvin, who was the person that was he was the ex-Minneapolis police officer. He was charged and convicted within a year of with George Floyd. Why is this taking so long here? Well, let's talk about the salary and the amount, the over $1 million that it's going to probably get to for these three officers. I'll say that the majority of us, the majority of taxpayers, I'll just say down in Pierce County, don't care. The majority of people.
And that's
don't,
based on what?
I think that's based on is something. It's just kind of it's built in. It's right. It's the cost of doing business. The city, Pierce County has already paid $4 million to the family of Manny Ellis. Right. The city of Tacoma hasn't even had to pay yet, but that's going to happen. I think that for far too long, people are so used to taxpayers having to pay for misconduct by law enforcement. So when you hear stories like this, you have people that's like, well, okay.
Okay, we have a ton of people who listen to us who live in Pierce County and Tacoma. Okay. Text us, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. Does it bother you that the trial hasn't happened? It's going to be 3 years and six September. Months if it goes through in September as it is scheduled now to do. As you mentioned, Pierce County already paid $4 million to settle the part of the wrongful death lawsuit brought on by the Ellis family. The Ellis family is also seeking $30 million from the city of Tacoma. These officers who are continuing to get their paycheck, I mean, the Tacoma police chief has said, I'm not going to decide, and I understand until after the trial. The Pierce County prosecutor has already added these officers to the Brady list, which means that they have credibility issues, and it would make that difficult for them, even if acquitted, to move to another department. So I want to know, if you live in Pierce County or Tacoma, do you care that this trial has now been delayed for 3+ years?
This might prove me wrong. This will prove me wrong if Pierce County folks text in and say, yes, I care about our taxpayers' money going towards the salaries of these three officers that are going to be going on trial for the murder of Manny Ellis.
Okay, we'll see. But meanwhile, let's get an update on another story we talked about yesterday. Mm-hmm. Open drug use can continue in Bellingham because a proposal to ban it has now been rejected. The city council says there just isn't enough jail space or drug treatment available. The mayor made his case to the council last night, saying that state law has essentially decriminalized open drug use. Bellingham Police Chief Rebecca Mertzik also spoke in favor of the ban.
I do believe this is an answer to the community problem we're having here, where fentanyl is just ravaging our community.
King 5 News was at last night's meeting. Bellingham City Council member Hannah Stone said, you know what, this proposed ordinance is not going to solve anything, at least not yet.
We don't have a therapeutic court and other options in place at this time than further criminalizing or trying to arrest our way out of addiction is just insane.
We should note that last year there were 70 calls for drug overdoses by mid-March in Bellingham. So far this year, there have been 87. So certainly on pace to have even more of these incidents involving drug use.
Teacher.
Uh-huh.
I have a question.
Yes.
Did the war on drugs just start 2-3 years ago? The war on drugs is 50 years old. So my question would be, why? Why don't you have the mental health treatment? Why don't you have the beds? Why don't you have the services in place? Government, what y'all been doing for 50 years? I know what you've been doing before you were arresting people in this case. And now, when, by the way, I don't think you should be able to do drugs out in the open. I actually disagree. You should not be able to. But you have to turn it down because you don't have the services in place. Again, I want to ask, what has local government been doing all these years?
Exactly. That's the thing. And if you look at a place like Bellingham, where the mayor actually proposed a solution and said, we will create these courts where they can go through the system and we will try to, either hold them accountable, but also give them an offer of treatment and get them services. But there are no treatment beds or services available. So essentially, once again, our hands are tied. That added to the basic decriminalization with the state law, which maybe that'll be changed in Olympia because there is a bill that would do that. But right now, it just feels hopeless. And that is what gets so frustrating. And I want to squeeze in this other story because it kind of goes hand in hand. In Seattle, homeless shelter beds are apparently even more scarce than previously thought. And now we're finding out that that could slow down the clearing of homeless encampments along the freeways. So the King County Regional Homelessness Authority initially estimated that there was a 22% vacancy rate in the region's shelters. But now the agency tells Como 4 News there are only five vacancies at local shelters and zero at tiny house villages. Como 4 News spoke with this man who lives near the encampment off the Mercer Street exit, and he recently moved buildings out of fear for his own safety.
I don't think this can wait. I don't think they should be delaying this. I think that camp needs to be cleaned up immediately.
And to further his point,
people don't feel safe. It's not a safe area to walk around at night and even during the day as well. The longer they wait, the worse those people are going to be.
So one little glimmer of hope, the Homelessness Authority is going to be opening nearly 70 units of housing this week. And apparently they will go to people living in the three what they call priority encampments. They are near I-5, the Ship Canal Bridge, and two in the International District. But got to point out that there are 220 people living in those camps right now. So do you hear a theme? 70 units
Talk
opening, 220 people living in those camps.
Can I, you want to see a theme?
Yeah.
I got one for you. So let me get, I want to make sure I got this straight, Ursula. We don't have the drug treatment areas. We lack for that. Check. We don't have the beds for those that are homeless and out there. We don't have enough of that. Check. And our first story of the day was talking about PCC and their workers and how they are asking for more money and how it was even set up a pantry for them so that some of them could eat.
I know. So listeners like you, Kai, who think, oh, my gosh, how can you talk about this on a daily basis? We wish we didn't have to. And yes, we need to continue looking for those solutions. And part of it is acknowledging, well, what do you do when you have to acknowledge a problem? You have to acknowledge that it exists, right?
Yeah.
That there is an issue.
Right. I want to say that I think I was wrong about Pierce County. At least the texters.
I told you.
There's a few now. There's a few, but the vast majority of texters texting in saying, no, I don't like that our tax dollars is going towards that. So, hey, there it is. Hey, coming up next here on the Gian Ursula Show, Sam Campbell, our Cairo news reporter, is going to join us. There's a little bit more details on the Redmond murders that happened out there last Friday. He joins us next. Gian Ursula.
To the G and Ursula Show. Happy Tuesday to all of you. Later in the show, we're going to talk about whether you can still make friends at our age, right? And what is it that people are missing the most when it comes to retirement? It's a cautionary tale. So we are going to get into that later in the show. But right now, we need to get into some new details that are coming out about what happened with a restraining order that was never served to a Texas man who ended up killing a Redmond woman and her husband last week. This has just been a heartbreaking story. And our reporter, Sam Campbell, has been poring through a protection order that was filed by the victims. Good morning, Sam. We've lost Sam, unfortunately. So we will try to get him. But, gee, I know that you. Oh, there you are. Okay, Sam, sorry. You're working from home. Now we can hear you. Okay, so let's talk.
Hi, Ursula. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about some of the threats that we're learning that Zohreh Sadeghi was getting from her stalker.
So the threats were varied. And after poring through this petition for a protection order that she and her husband had filed, I mean, there was a multitude. At one point, she claims that he had threatened to burn himself alive in her front yard, and in doing so, burning her favorite tree, and how repeatedly he would tell her that the only way he was going to stop contacting her was if he died. And so this is just, you know, one of many threats that she say that he made. She also claimed that he had threatened to split up her and her husband.
Hey, Sam, one of the details that I saw in there as well is that there was contact between the alleged killer and the husband. Talk about that.
So the contact you might be referring to is that he had, when he had run into a roadblock in calling the woman, and this is according to the petition for protection order, he then turned his attention to her husband and their neighbors, their friends, basically any way to get through. And so according to the husband's own statements in the petition for protection order, the suspect had called him and on multiple occasions and had said, you know, give the phone to your wife. And he said, look, he recalls saying she doesn't want to talk to you. She's an adult. And so that's, you know, the buck stops there.
And Sam, a lot of our listeners were asking, like, what kind of podcast was it? Because initially, when we first started reporting this, she was a podcaster and he was a truck driver who was listening to her podcast. But it sounded like it went beyond someone who was listening to her podcast. What was the time frame of all this and where she was aware that things had changed and become much more aggressive?
Sure. So I've been trying to find out what the podcast was that she was hosting. I haven't been able to find out that much, at least not confirming. There are multiple people with her name, right? And we have to do our due diligence. But we do know that when I first got there to the scene on Friday morning, police had told me that this suspected stalker knew her because of her podcast. And then our understanding changed later in the day when the police chief, Daryl Lowe, held a press conference and said, well, they had actually met through an app called Clubhouse. And Clubhouse hosts audio chat rooms. Oftentimes, celebrities or well-known people will interact with fans or other people in their industry in these rooms. And so that was actually how they met. According to the husband's statements in the petition for a protection order, the first time that he had heard his wife mention the suspect's name was in summer 2021. But then there's a large gap until about the following winter and spring, where things seem to take a turn for the worse, with the woman claiming that the suspect had become more obsessive. We do know, I've spoken with police, and our understanding now is that he did listen to her podcast. That is how he knew of her. And then he met her through Clubhouse. And our understanding now is that they actually had met in person at least once. We don't know how many times. We don't know what the extent of those meetings were. But police do tell me that they had, you know, a friendship before this all happened.
Oh, so it does come out that that there was some type of meeting in person, or at least on one occasion. And the reasons for those meetings, is that known? Is that like a big friend group that is a part of? Is there a community of podcast listeners? Just trying to understand the meetup.
I haven't been able to speak with the investigators specifically who are looking into this, but the police at Redmond Police Department have told me that, you know, they did meet up at least once. They had a friendship that was ongoing. We don't know the specifics of, you know, what their relationship as friends were like, but we do know that it was friendly before it turns sour.
Wow.
Okay, so I think the other question that is still outstanding is why, given the level of threats that were being made against her and the awareness of some of the threats that were happening, why were they not able to track him down?
So I asked this specific question actually to Redmond Police today, again, Ursula, because after this has been reported, a lot of people have been concerned because the police chief at the press conference on Friday had said, this protection order, it doesn't protect you from someone intent on doing harm. And unfortunately, that's what happened. But I asked specifically what were the roadblocks that police ran into in trying to serve this man the protection order. Was it just because of his job as a trucker keeping him on the move, or were local jurisdictions not cooperating? And police were very quickly to tell me that no, it was not the latter, that it was not about other jurisdictions not cooperating in an attempt to serve the protection order, but rather it was because he was so hard to track down. I do know that investigators took this threat seriously enough that they did request a search warrant for his phone records. I don't know how far that got. I don't know what they found. As you can look at the timeline of these events in the petition for protection order, you actually see that this was still very much an active investigation, with police having been with the couple when they opened a gift from the suspect in late February.
Wow.
So this was still very much an active investigation, but police do tell me that this did not rise to the occasion for, say, a federal agency like the FBI to get involved, because it is just a misdemeanor.
Real quick, before you go, Sam, was there anything that you have read in the no contact order anywhere or have heard? Was the alleged stalker, was he ever here in this area before this?
The woman claims that he called from her neighborhood and nearby inns, like as in a motel, previously. So he had previously stopped at her door to deliver flowers, she says, I believe on December 20th. And she remembers that date because she says that she had just had major back surgery and her husband was leaving for Australia for a trip. And minutes after he left, she says the suspect arrived at the door with flowers.
Wow. Thank you, Sam Campbell. We really appreciate your help, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, G. Thanks,
all right.
Ursula.
That is Sam Campbell, Cairo News reporter here on the G and Ursula Show.
This is just the saddest story, and you hear the details of what they had gone through to try to protect themselves, working with police, et cetera. I mean, with the restraining orders and protection orders, I mean, if someone is bent on hurting you, sometimes that doesn't help.
No, it doesn't. Very sad story. Very. Hey, coming up next, we need to talk. Hey, more businesses are using dynamic pricing to max demand profits. Do you like this? And we're going to give you a clear example as to what happened. We do that next. Gene Ursula. Got to start nicknaming these days, Nick. What's today? Today's Tuesday. What kind of day is today?
I got to think about this kind of day, but we're amping up a little bit from Monday, so
okay.
It's a progress.
Ursula, you like
Tripping Tuesday?
I like that. Tripping Tuesday.
Okay.
Hey Nick, start writing these down. All right. Hey, coming up at 10:06, Matt Markovich is going to come in and come in to talk about what's going on down in the legislature. By the way, I love having Matt Markovich come in. He has done a phenomenal job of covering the legislature and what's going on down in Olympia. I feel that that's given us it's been a huge part of this show for the last month or so. But right now, Ursula, we need to talk. And we need to talk about dynamic pricing. Why is there no set price for anything anymore? You can blame what's called dynamic pricing, also known as surge pricing, and it's making its way off of Amazon and Uber into other unexpected areas like bowling alleys, fitness classes, and tee times at municipal golf courses. There was a story of a bowling alley, Ursula, where someone wanted to come and prepay for the lane in advance. Well, at that time, it would have been $200, but because you know, hey, you know, you're not going to be able to get that particular lane in that area. They're like, okay, we'll pay more. And they end up paying more for it, which was $400. Mm-hmm. So the question is, oh, by the way, AMC Theaters is also introducing dynamic pricing. Airlines do it all the time. Hotels do it all the time. The question is this, Ursula. Yes or no, do you like dynamic pricing?
Depends. I know you want to say yes or no, but it's just not that simple. Because
it's not.
Because if I'm looking at concerts, for example, we talked about the Taylor Swift concert, and you know, with Ticketmaster and the ability to basically have the entire market covered, and so I mean, you're talking about thousands of dollars to go to a concert. Yeah, you can say it's just capitalism. It's just, you know, the way it is. There's such high demand. Not everyone can go there, but that will mean that there are more and more things that are just going to be really for the rich or people who can afford it. But on the flip side, I would say, hey, I wouldn't want someone to tell me how much money I can make on something. If I have a good or a product or a service that at certain times is just going to, you know, get me a whole lot more money.
Mm.
I would want that ability to maximize my own personal profit. So I get it. It's kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah. It's bad. I told Chef this morning and last night, I told him I loved it. And that's further, so far from the truth. And it's far from the truth because let's just take concerts right now, right? All of this. In the Seattle area, you guys probably have tickets. You know, Seattle right now is red hot when it comes to concerts. You got Bruce Springsteen has already come. You got Morris Day is going to be coming up to Tulalip. Ursula knows about that.
Yeah,
you got
just bought tickets.
You got Madonna, right? You got Madonna that's coming.
Uh-huh.
You got Janet Jackson that's
uh-huh.
coming. You got
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. Lionel Richie. You got Boyz II Men coming in down to the Emerald Queen coming up in April. You got Drake now coming. You got Beyonce coming. I'm saying all that to say, it's for the rich. Like, you guys know, how many of you guys want to see more than one concert, but you can only probably see one?
Okay, Morris Day, just FYI, was $55. So that's still doable right now. Why, though? Because they're not expecting the kind of demand. I mean, it is a whole supply and demand thing. And, okay, Uber, you used to do DoorDash.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, the folks at Uber were talking about the need for dynamic pricing, because obviously if you have such low prices and they're artificially capped, then we wouldn't be able to get rides because the demand would overwhelm the supply.
Right.
So
it's a double-edged sword right now, and it's really bad. And it's really making it to where it's and the reason why we talked about inflation not being controlled is because the more prices go up, people still are paying. They're not. Nobody's slowing down on paying for these things. So these concerts that if you're paying $200 a ticket, $300 a ticket, you want to know why you're paying that? Because other people are paying it.
Yeah. Well, when we say no one is slowing, you know, no. I mean, if you have even a little bit of money, you're still buying those things. I mean, more people are traveling than ever before.
Yeah.
Like you said, I mean, the other day, I mean, we were talking about walk into a casino and you can see no evidence of a recession because, I mean, of course, there are people who are gambling with money they don't have.
Yeah.
But people are still buying. People are still consuming. It's just everything's that much more.
You said $55 to see Morris Day.
Yeah.
I believe that $55, maybe $60, you should be able to go see Janet Jackson. You should be able to go see Madonna. There should be a place for you in that stadium to see those people. Good stuff, Ursula. Coming up next at 10:06, Matt Markovich is going to come in to talk about a new way to graduate high school for kids exploring a trade. Gene Ursula.